bei Traces of Light. Elsbeth Horbati nimmt dich mit auf die Suche nach Menschen und Gemeinschaften, die in diesen schwierigen Zeiten Mut machen.
In diesen sich rasch verändernden Zeiten gibt es immer wieder Menschen, die eine besondere Ruhe in sich tragen. Nicht, weil sie die Schwierigkeiten der Welt nicht sehen, sondern weil sie gelernt haben, auch dann klar zu sehen, wenn rundherum vieles in Wanken gerät. Mein heutiger Gast hat einen großen Teil seines Lebens in Krisengebieten und schwierigen Kontexten verbracht, zuerst als Arzt in Australien und Großbritannien, später an der thailändisch-kambodschanischen Grenze während des Krieges in Bosnien und viele Jahre danach in der internationalen Arbeit in Projekten mit mentaler Gesundheit. In unserem Gespräch auf Englisch spricht er über Trauma, Solidarität und psychische Gesundheit in unsicheren Zeiten und darüber, wie er versucht, den Dialog zwischen Menschen in der zunehmenden gespalteten Gesellschaft der USA zu fördern. Ein wichtiges Gespräch für Traces of Light.
Good morning. In the current podcast I'm doing, I will continue on the theme of what happened to all these people who used to work for USAID. I'm here with Paul Bolton. He's calling in from?
Situate, Massachusetts, USA.
Massachusetts, USA. And we'll be talking a bit, how can you in these difficult times still give some light on your colleagues, on your family, on the world. Thank you very much for joining me, Paul. So just to start with, maybe you want to give me a bit of a background, who you are and where you've been working.
Okay, sure. I'm happy to be here. Happy to talk to you. So my background is I grew up in Australia. I qualified as a physician in Australia. Working in teaching hospitals there. Then I left and went over to the United Kingdom, where I also worked as a physician. And in Australia and New Zealand, I had a variety of jobs. In Australia and UK, I had a variety of jobs. I worked as a flying doctor, worked as a ship's doctor. I worked as a doctor in small country towns. And then after the United Kingdom, I went to Thailand, to the Thai-Cambodia border, where I worked as the director of a medical program during the war between Thailand, Cambodia, and Vietnam. I was there for a few years. Then later on, I worked as the director of a medical program in the Bosnia War. Mm. Then I switched careers and I started to focus on mental health because I realized that one of the problems with all of our health and development programs was that we weren't addressing mental health at all. And that was actually making our programs less successful. Our infectious disease, our chronic disease programs, our seed agriculture programs were all affected by lack of mental health programming. So then I started to work on the development and research into effective mental health programs in low and middle income countries. That was around the turn of the century, and I did that for about 20 years, working in about 35 different countries, working with colleagues to figure out what is most effective and helpful, and then integrating that into other programs. More recently, I was USAID's first mental health coordinator from 2020 to 2023. So I left about a year before the agency was effectively shut down. And since that time, I have worked in advocacy. So I've been advocating for the return of foreign assistance in an improved form. Sadly, since the great reduction in foreign assistance, one of the casualties has been mental health programming. Mm-hmm. The U.S. government and the various NGOs they support and the government programs in other countries that they support have all drawn back from supporting mental health. So that's no longer a focus. And so the any programs that assist with mental health at the moment are privately funded and much smaller than the programs used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I advocate for the return of foreign assistance because without that return, we're not going to have mental health programming in any to any size that we actually need it,
mm-hmm.
Including programming for former, aid workers.
Mm-hmm. But the people that used to work for USAID were, 1 year ago, they were told to go back home, no? About, yes. I understand, almost about 10,000 people.
Yes, that's exactly right. 10,000 people across the USA and around the world. Yeah. So,
and
you know,
so,
your question about am I supporting them or are other people supporting them?
Yeah, are other people supporting?
Yeah, I know of no efforts to do that. Mm-hmm. Everyone is pretty much on their own. So if people are getting mental health assistance, they're getting mental health assistance through their own local mental health services, if they have them, mm-hmm. and through their own health insurance, if it covers it. But there's nothing from that I know that's organized for former workers to assist with their mental health.
Okay.
To me, I mean, sadly, I feel this for my fellow workers, but I feel this even more for the populations and people that we used to assist overseas.
Yeah,
to
of
have
course.
Programs shut down when, frankly, they were highly effective. And really, people were in a lot of need. 75% of all mental health problems in the world are in low and middle income countries. And that's partly due to their population, but it's also largely due to the fact that that's where the trauma and the loss is in, to a large extent.
Yeah, you're right. I lived many years in Nicaragua myself, in Latin America and Mexico. And after I've worked there, I decided to study trauma issues because you start to realize the effects of all the politics on this country have had is traumatization of the whole population. Yeah.
And so people need, abilities to deal with that.
Yeah.
One of the wonderful things about mental health is we found that about 80% of the people who came to our programs could be assisted purely with counseling therapy. So in other words, most people, the vast majority of people, don't need drugs. They don't need special equipment. What they need is trained counselors. And one of the things that we have a plentiful supply of around the world, regardless of being high, low, or middle-income country, is people. So we would train local people to provide those kind of counseling skills. And as I mentioned, about 80% of people would get better just with that.
Was mich an diesem Gespräch besonders berührt, ist seine Erfahrung aus vielen Krisengebieten. Nämlich, dass die psychische Gesundheit kein Luxus ist, sondern oft die Grundlage dafür, dass überhaupt Heilung, Entwicklung oder Gemeinschaft möglich wird. Er zeigt, dass diese Hilfe nicht immer kompliziert oder teuer sein muss, sondern dass sie oft beginnt mit etwas Menschlichem, mit Zuhören, Beziehungen und Menschen vor Ort, die füreinander da sind.
Ja, that brings me maybe to a funny question. What do you do to stay healthy in this very demanding world?
It's funny. I'm actually what I don't know if you've heard the term in English, a happy warrior. Have you heard that term?
A happy warrior? No, I haven't.
A happy warrior is somebody who's in a fight that they enjoy.
Okay.
And I feel like I'm in a fight, and it's a good fight. I mean, it's a fight worth having. And so how I maintain my own mental health in this environment, I assume you mean the U.S. political environment.
Mm-hmm.
Is by doing things that I think make a difference.
Yeah.
If I was to just sit and vent with my friends and neighbors complaining, that would make my mental health worse, because we would just, as a group, you know, when you get people and they just vent about how bad things are, they tend to dig themselves into a hole where they just make their mental state worse. Mm-hmm. But when you're involved in activities where you feel like you're actually having some impact, for me anyway, that actually makes me feel good. And it's the continuation of, you know, like I said to you, I was in war zone in Southeast Asia. I was in war zone in Bosnia. To me, this is another war zone, different kind of war, but still the same thing, still the opportunity to make a difference, still the opportunity to change things.
Yeah.
So my mental health is very good.
Yeah, I think I'll join your group. Because I do the same thing. I think I'm also like what we do today in with my podcast, with my coachings. I find I'm doing something in this world to keep us healthy.
Right.
And as you say, this is mentally so much better than complaining or worrying. I think the worst part is worrying. And yes. Be anxious, because then you start to be able, or people start to manipulate you when you're afraid, no?
Right. Yeah. And I think also about the future, like, you know, this dark period is going to pass, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do we want to say about ourselves when it does pass? That we did nothing or that we did something? And I fear being in a situation where in the future I'd have to say to myself, you know, there was this time when we really needed people to speak up and work and I didn't do anything effective.
Yeah.
So it's almost like an investment in my future mental health.
Exactly. Oh, you say the very great words.
Paul spricht hier, wie wichtig es für die eigene psychische Gesundheit ist, nicht in Angst und Ohnmacht stecken zu bleiben, sondern aktiv zu werden und etwas Sinnvolles beizutragen. Er beschreibt sich selbst als einen Happy Warrior, das heißt als jemand, der trotz schwierigen Zeiten sich engagiert, weil ihm Menschen und die gesellschaftliche Entwicklung nicht egal sind. Dabei erzählt er auch, warum Hoffnung, Dialog und konkretes Handeln für ihn heute wichtiger sind denn je. Paul beschreibt Hoffnung nicht als Optimismus oder Verdrängen, sondern als etwas Aktives. Er sagt, wenn wir nur zusammensitzen und uns gegenseitig in Angst reden, werden wir kränker. Aber wenn wir das Gefühl haben, dass unser Handeln einen Unterschied macht, selbst einen kleinen, dann verändert es auch unsere psychische Gesundheit. Und vielleicht ist das genau diese eine Spur von Licht.
So, for me, I'm interested in media. I'm happy to work with media, but I think that what it really takes to sidestep this media bias is for the 10,000 people around the United States who've been let go to reach out to their local churches, their civic groups, their other groups, and do presentations where they explain to people what we lost when we lost USAID.
That's what you do.
Yes, that's what I do.
Yeah, great, yeah. And what do you think is the main thing you lost by losing an organization like that?
I would say, I mean, for me, being inside the organization, right, I deeply feel the loss of programs that I think helped people.
Mm-hmm.
That really made a difference. And the way in which we shut those programs down, frankly, led to a lot of indirect deaths.
Mm-hmm.
Because people had no other arrangements.
Yeah.
You probably heard with HIV, people suddenly had their HIV medicine stopped or if they were in malaria programs or TB programs, suddenly having those medications stopped. And because it was done so suddenly, there was no plan to how are these people going to replace this medication? No ability to make arrangements by the governments or NGOs or other groups to try to fill the gap was just suddenly lost. So I feel that very much.
Yeah.
For the United States, honestly, I feel the country has been dishonored. I feel that. I talk to people overseas, colleagues. United States is not viewed nearly as positively as it was before. Some people in other countries, particularly prominent people, particularly politicians, are not willing to speak public about this because, you know, they're trying not to make the situation worse.
Yeah.
But we know privately there's a lot of anger against the United States about how this was done. The main criticism of the United States is not that we withdrew aid, it's how we did it. Obviously uncaring, cruel way of going about it. And now that's our brand around the world. The U.S. government is cruel and uncaring.
So why do you think, where does it come from that they decided to just pull out and just close down? So anything I knew about the U.S., you know?
Yes. Well, it was a surprise to us. I mean, I could talk about why I think they could do it. And one of the reasons is that, again, many Americans had never heard of USAID and how aid was done. So we were actively discouraged in that sense from reaching out to the American public and informing them about what we did. And I always draw the comparison with NASA. NASA was the complete opposite. NASA's mission statement was actually to inform the American public about
what they
did. Exactly,
yeah. Everybody knows them.
Yeah, everyone knows them. They actually encouraged and supported their staff to go out and talk to high schools, colleges, whoever was interested. We were not. And so that's something that when we get back to foreign assistance, if we have an independent agency again, I think that agency really has to make that as part of their mission. You asked me why they did it. My view, based on the evidence, is there's a whole lot of things that reasons that they want to have to pay less taxes. And so shuttering USAID is one part of saving money so that they can provide tax cuts. Yeah. And it's an observation because I see what the government is doing. They have tried to cut back on Medicare and Medicaid, which is our health insurance agencies through the government. They cut back on services for veterans. They pretty much are cutting back on everything that they can that serves the public in order to fund these tax cuts.
Well, thank you very much, Paul. Before we end, You said at the beginning that this is just a phase we're going through. Where is the end of the tunnel, Paul?
Well, I think it's a phase because the vast majority of the American public in surveys support foreign assistance, right? And the current administration, you know, didn't go after foreign assistance in general as much as they went after the agency. And in some ways, I agreed with some of what they said, that the agency needed some reforms. So I see foreign assistance as coming back as a politically popular thing eventually after this current administration has left, and that we have an opportunity to build it, to build a better version of foreign assistance than we did before. Yeah. So I feel about foreign assistance in general quite hopeful that this is a temporary pullback. And, you know, I used to work in humanitarian aid, and one of the things that we would say there was that the more something is destroyed, the more fundamentally you can rebuild it. And I feel that with this, we have an opportunity to fundamentally rebuild, you know, foreign assistance to make it better.
Yeah, thank you very much. And any word that brings you through these difficult times?
I look at the polls. I think that the mood of the country has changed and it's going to be reflected in the election. And I think we're going to turn the corner. In some ways, I think that the reputation of the United States is permanently damaged. I don't think that it's retrievable. But I think that in terms of what the United States does in the future, I mean, I think that we can get much closer back to where we were, and in a better way of supporting our citizens and being a good neighbor in the world. But that kind of trust and reputation, that's going to take a lot longer before people trust us again.
Thank you very, very much, Paul. I truly appreciate taking your time and give us some words of hope, which are getting fewer and fewer. So I really, truly appreciate you staying in touch and maybe talk to each other some other day without recording, just to hear a bit more of what you do. Thank you very much, Paul.
You're welcome, Elspeth. It's great to talk to you.
Vielleicht bleibt aus diesem Gespräch vor allem eine Frage, die ihr gerne wiederum im Kommentar beantworten könntet. Wer möchten wir gewesen sein, wenn diese schwierige Zeit einmal vorbei ist? Menschen, die nur zugeschaut haben oder Menschen, die versucht haben, etwas solidarisch und menschlich zu bleiben. Paul spricht davon, sich einzusetzen. Für ihn macht es Sinn, etwas zu unternehmen, was größer ist als die Angst oder der Zynismus. Vielleicht auch, dass Hoffnung manchmal nicht bedeutet, sicher zu sein, was man tut, sondern trotzdem weitergehen und weiterhin füreinander da zu sein. Danke fürs Zuhören.
Das war Traces of Light, ein Podcast von Elspeth Horbati, die auf der Suche nach Menschen und Gemeinschaften ist, die in diesen schwierigen Zeiten Mut machen.